I'm David Force on behalf of the appellant, Jan Ronci, and if I sound disjointed, it's because of a computer malfunction.
Okay. Fair enough.
And also, perhaps, because the record in this case and what happened below is, I think anyone would agree, somewhat disjointed and unusual. I've been given 10 minutes total for argument on this case, and based on that, I'm not going to repeat very much that's in my brief. I would simply suggest that both the procedural and the substantive problems with this judgment, I submit, are each independently and certainly together adequate to require its reversal.
How would you, to help focus at least from my standpoint, how would you respond to the ruling on causation, even assuming that the court confused porphyria, porphyria, with the more generic disorder. There's still the issue of causation. It's an interesting sort of law school exam question. How do you rule out or focus on sorting out the multiple causes, diesel fumes on the highway, or cosmetics that she may have applied? How does one ever tie it down to a particular incident of spraying pesticides?
Well, I think you have to look at it, Your Honor, in terms of scientific probabilities, and that could have been done with the evidence that Ms. Ronci did submit timely from the experts, including Dr. Engelking, the chemist and chemistry expert on how these particular substances in the herbicides are aerosolized and how long they remained in the air.
Well, that just shows presence. I guess maybe you could point us to linking or linkage testimony. That's what the same question I had.
Well, both Dr. Elliott and Dr. Morton gave their opinions again after the judge had already made his conclusion that he wasn't going to consider that evidence and didn't, but they had both given their expert opinions that it was exposures to these substances that caused the specific incidences of enhanced disability that the plaintiff alleged in her complaint.
As distinguished from any other source? Were they prepared to opine? I didn't remember that they were prepared to opine that there was a direct but-for causation.
Well, Dr. Elliott did, and I believe that Dr. Morton's supplemental declaration is sufficient to, you know, create a genuine issue of material fact. Whether it's sufficient to convince a fact finder is another matter.
Well, we're in Dr. Elliott. He simply says he I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm really trying. This is, as I say, an interesting case, but. And I'm sympathetic if someone is subject to multiple causes of this, but in order to tag who's responsible, where is it in Dr. Elliott that says that it had to be this particular source when there are numerous sources?
Well, I don't believe Dr. Elliott said it had to be. It was his opinion, as I try to recall. Looking in the blue brief because I cited.
Well,
maybe you could show. I'm looking at the supplemental declaration of Dr. Elliott, and I guess I'm just trying to find the causation statements. I mean, he does say declaration, he says, I believe travel on the roads that have been chemically treated puts Ms. Ronci in a severe risk of exacerbating her porphyria.
And I believe that's where the other paragraph I'm looking at, or I was referring to, comes to. It's paragraph 15, which is on ER 25. And it doesn't, what it states that, what it says is the fact that Mr. Joel applies herbicides according to accepted protocol does not mean that such an application will not result in a potentially medical harmful exposure. And basically, he's not ruling out other potential exposures. I guess.
So that's the question. Leaving aside even the scientific part, does he make the reasonable probability that it's this particular substance that is causing her problem?
Your Honor, I guess my answer to that question is whether or not he does, there was no contention by the movement for summary judgment that her problems were caused by anything else. And she didn't have a burden, it seems to me, to present evidence on that issue when it was not raised by the movement for summary judgment. And it simply wasn't.
Okay.
Could I bring up this procedural, you briefed the problem of you did not consent to the consolidation or the combining of two cases and the crossover of evidence from one case to the other. And your point seems to be well taken. This was done without your consent. And it may have been an improper employment of judicial discretion. We don't have we haven't decided that yet. May not have to. But how were you prejudiced? What happened because of the consolidation that hurt your case?
What happened was that all of the scientific information that Judge Coffin did find reliable was the argument by the defendant in the other case about the expert opinions in that other case. And they cross-examined one another's experts. That happened approximately several months before this consolidation, whatever one calls it. I don't know what one calls what happened.
Were you able to participate, or did you hear? Or
we didn't even know the case existed.
We didn't know what was going on.
Did not even know the case existed when those depositions were taken and those declarations were filed.
Well, now that you've read those exhibits and depositions and so forth, how did they prejudice your client?
Well, they prejudiced my client in the sense that the vagueness of or the supposed scientific inconsistencies or deficiencies in Mr. Gabbard's evidence simply cannot be extended to this plaintiff's evidence. For example, Dr. Engelking's chemical dispersal testimony, it seems to me, is the best example of that. There was no explanation at all, as far as I can tell, in the Gabbard case, of how these substances that allegedly triggered Mr. Gabbard's alleged condition, which may in fact not be recognized by medical science to exist, but there was no explanation as to how they would be in the air to be inhaled or ingested by him. And
was there in your case?
Yes, there was.
Now, how did you have measurements of like air quality control engineers going out and measuring drift and density of pesticide vapors and so forth?
A graduate student performed a dissertation study of that in the same general area as Ms. Ronzi's home in Lane County, under the supervision of Dr.
Well,
Engelking.
It's a pretty big county. It's about 150 miles long and 80 miles wide. So.
Southeast of Eugene is where the study was performed at all. The only variable that would be different from where the study location was as opposed to the actual places where that she alleged she had passed through and inhaled the substances would be weather.
Were the substances identified?
Yes.
By their chemical nomenclature and their propensity to drift and
yes.
so forth?
Yes.
And that was all in your evidence. So how did it hurt you that the other guy's evidence maybe wasn't quite as favorable?
Well, I guess it hurt us because the judge assumed that any defect that was applicable to Mr. Gabbard's evidence was automatically applicable to Ms. Ronci's evidence, and he did not consider Dr. Engelking's declaration. It's just not there.
But Engelking didn't make a causation finding.
No, he explained how the substance would be in the air to support
right.
a causation finding by the medical experts. And once again, it seems to me the problem with looking at that issue now is that the motion for summary judgment did not dispute the fact that she inhaled those substances.
Do you want to save your 1 second for rebuttal? Now down to zero. We'll give you some time for rebuttal.
I appreciate that.
May it please the court, counsel, Dan Casey for the Department of Transportation. Runners, I'd like to start off by just responding to some of the comments in the opening argument.
Could you address right off the bat whether the department actually raised but-for causation in
defense
to this?
That's the first point.
Okay, fine.
There was two bases that the department moved for summary judgment. The first was but-for causation, and I can quote from, this is at the plaintiff's excerpt of record, page 14. This is defendant's summary judgment motion where defendant argues, quote, plaintiff can show no credible or scientifically reliable evidence that any chemical herbicide applied by defendant to roadways it manages causes any disabling condition suffered by plaintiff. That was the thrust of the main point on which the state sought summary judgment, is that there are, according to plaintiff's own evidence, a myriad of chemicals out there which could have triggered the reaction she claims to have, that could have triggered the reaction from the condition that she claims to have. And she offered nothing to narrow that down other than her own, basically her own self-diagnosis.
Now, just so I'm clear, that was an assertion that even if she has a legitimate reaction to chemicals, there was no evidence that this particular chemical causes it generally, causes porphyria, or that she actually had, in fact, assuming you were to lose on a expert battle of experts,
yes,
that your herbicides could cause, was the issue joined on whether or not, if so, these herbicides were at the place, at the time, in the location, and therefore it's and she drove in that area?
Yes, Your Honor.
That was also issue
was
joined?
Yes, if you read the district court's order, that is the alternative basis. Assuming plaintiff is correct and she wins on the expert testimony issue, that the magistrate should have let in the declarations from her experts. Okay, that says something about MCS or porphyria generally, but the alternative basis, which was raised in the defendant's motion for summary judgment, in the supporting memorandum, and the summary judgment hearing quoted in the beginning of the defendant's supplemental excerpt of record, the state did indeed raise that issue, and that was the alternative basis in the last two or three pages of the magistrate's order, where it says, let's put Daubert and the Gabbard case and all of this aside, because that seems to be the main point about which plaintiff is complaining. Let's put that aside. Plaintiff still hasn't carried the burden of causation.
Well, no, I understand what the magistrate judge said. I've got that. I'm trying to understand whether, in fact, the way this proceeding arose, because it was confusing, whether, in fact, there was a fair opportunity on the part of Ms. Ronci to address the specific but-for causation issue.
And it's in response, Your Honor, she did. And again, I would cite the court to ER 14, which is defendant's motion for summary judgment and the supporting memorandum in support of the motion for summary judgment. And I can quote from, I don't have the exact page number, but it is in there. There were two bases that the defendant moved for summary judgment. One was She can't show causation, that what she is allegedly suffering is from anything that defendant put out on the road. The second one was that her accommodation she's requesting, which is chemical-free maintenance of all the roads that the Department of Transportation manages, that was not a reasonable accommodation.
When was Ms. Ronci made aware of your motion that you cited?
It was filed, Your Honor, on March 13th, 2002.
And she got that right off the bat,
yes,
even though this consolidation issue?
She was pro se at that time, and we have a certificate of service from our trial counsel that it was served on Ms. Ronci. We've never heard from her that she has not received that.
One question I have then, I'm looking at Dr. Morton's declaration.
Yes, right.
He goes through a variety of stuff about the disease and pesticides and then how it affects her ability of her body to process these. And then at the end he says that without protection from exposure to this known trigger, she could have a fatal outcome. Why wouldn't that be a sufficient foundation to at least raise an issue of fact on that point?
Because we need to take a step back and say, well, is the reaction that she had in the first place the result of defendant's chemicals? If it's not, she could be out on the roadway and doused with defendant's chemicals. And if she doesn't have a reaction, it won't be fatal. And that's the flaw in defendant's case. Is that there are so many chemicals.
So she has to be dead in order to
sue? No, you're right. No. She just has to prove some sort of a link. Basically, what we have here is plaintiff coming into her doctors and saying, I drove on the freeway on the day that I think they sprayed, and I feel sick. And the doctor said, oh, MCS or porphyria or whatever it is. They said, well, it must have been the chemicals that made you sick. And I would, if I could, point the court to a colloquy that occurred.
So let me just ask you, do you think that she needs an opinion then that would say more probably than not, although she's allergic to many chemicals, the DOT's chemicals, not these other ones, were the cause, and that's what's missing?
Something along those lines. I'm not saying that that's sufficient, Your Honor, but at least that would be more than what we have here. And we don't even have that.
I'm not sure I understand what you're focusing on. You suggest that the issue is whether or not the herbicides that issue could cause, and you're saying there's a failure of proof on that, but the magistrate judge doesn't seem to rationalize it that way. What he says is accepting that it does, there are lots of other things that can as well, and it hasn't been isolated. That's an entirely different issue.
And I agree with your characterization, and if I'm not clear, I apologize. On the alternative basis, even if plaintiff can prove in general the chemicals that defendant uses in general causes this reaction, she didn't prove it caused a reaction in her.
Well, how would I'm coming back to Judge McEwen's question? How would you expect someone to prove that in a transitory situation? If I'm driving down the highway, let's suppose the following: that I live in a certain location, rural location. I get up every morning, I go through a routine that's, roughly, it's not, not robotic, but I can go through, in a sense of a regression analysis, I can reduce substantially, if not entirely, the probable causes because I put on the same cosmetics, I drive the same route, and 2 days ago, ODT sprayed the highway, and that's happened 5 times now, and every time they spray and I go past that area on the highway, sure, there are diesel trucks out there, but I don't get it on the days when I'm driving the highway and they're diesel trucks.
Is that what has to be proved? No, Your Honor, because, if plaintiff is saying, well, they spray DDT, I'm pulling something out, or Roundup on that day, having her come in and saying, well, they sprayed Roundup, I got sick, therefore Roundup made me sick, is not the only way. She could go get some Roundup, bring it to her doctor, and have herself tested to say, how does she react to Roundup?
That's why you're confusing things. The magistrate judge seems to accept as a triable issue, or at least as a debatable issue, that she does, in fact, suffer it from that, but his something, is it could be either that or it could be diesel fuel.
That's right, Your Honor.
Well, so he comes in and says, look, I'm allergic to Roundup, and I'm blistered all over. And he still says, yeah, but you could have had it from diesel fuel,
too. How would she know she's allergic to Roundup? Other than saying, well, I've had tested, or I was in my garage and I spilled some. That's the point, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I'm not getting your. I'm obviously not answering your question.
No, I'm just trying to. I'm trying to appreciate what the magistrate judge.
Well, the magistrate judge, I think what it was saying is like, even assuming that
she's allergic to Roundup,
has she proven that? Well, okay.
I thought it was saying, even assuming she's allergic to Roundup, we don't know that it was Roundup and not something else.
That's right.
Like diesel fuel or cosmetics that were causing the problem.
That's right.
That's how I read the magistrate.
Yes, and that's, yes. What?
So I come back to my hypothetical then.
Yes.
I'm allergic to Roundup and I'm allergic to diesel fuel, potentially. Now, I come back and I demonstrate that I've driven past this point numerous times, and the only time I get this allergic reaction is contemporaneous with spraying of herbicides. Is that enough to establish but-for causation?
I'm out of time, Your Honor, if I could.
Oh, you can definitely answer the question.
The answer to that would be no, because it is speculative. It gets to the point of, on the fine line of how much is enough or how much is not enough. And it's the state's position that in light of the other chemicals that are out there, that plaintiff admitted could cause her reaction, that is speculative to say, because it's allowing the jury to say, okay, we've got 1,000 chemicals out there, or even 2. Now you guess which one.
Well, no, they're not guessing. They're doing a regression. You know, you try and figure out on a.
But we don't have that, Your Honor.
I know we don't have here.
What you just described, the regression I go through every day, and it's only these days that they spray, that's not in the record. If we had that, maybe. Maybe
that was my question.
Okay, yes, maybe that would be enough, but we don't have that, Your Honor.
Right.
Could I ask you to respond to the procedural point of combining these two cases and evidence coming in the Gabbard case, which Ronci now says might have caused the judge to treat her evidence in a way that was, so it was less credible and had less probative value in her case because opinions that the trial judge formed in hearing the other case, which Ronci didn't have an opportunity to cross-examine or respond to. Now, how do you respond to their point that it was prejudicial to stir these two cases together and then treat them as if it was just one trial?
The answer to that, Your Honor, is the choice that plaintiff had here on the record and what she did submit and what she did not submit was using the Gabbard evidence or using no evidence. And that's the point. The magistrate was trying to help this woman get past the Daubert issue, to at least survive that. She submitted no evidence on the general scientific theory of MCS syndrome.
Was she still pro se at that time?
Not at the time. When the case was consolidated, yes. The magistrate sent out an order in May of 2002 and said, in 6 weeks I'm having a hearing, and I'm going to hear this case with Gabbard, and plaintiff can submit any briefing or argument before or during the hearing, and if she doesn't, I'm going to decide this case with Gabbard. And specifically the court said in that notice that it considered plaintiff's case to share a common issue with Gabbard specifically whether MCS syndrome is a recognized disability under the ADA. 6 weeks later, on June 24th, when that hearing occurred, plaintiff shows up and she now has counsel. And at that hearing, the magistrate again, from defendants, attorneys' arguments, and from the magistrate's very pointed questions, that Daubert is an issue in this case. The magistrate says, on SDR, I'm just like the court of the pages, SDR pages 8, 16, 17, 42A, 45, and 46, the magistrate asks specific questions of plaintiff's counsel, saying, well, how does this, what you're saying to me, satisfy Daubert? That can't get by Daubert. That's not scientifically reliable evidence. Plaintiff had notice then. Then the magistrate says, okay, you didn't bring your evidence to court on the summary judgment hearing. There was a representation that plaintiff had 2 declarations that were not signed. The magistrate leaves the record open for 2 more weeks, Your Honor, and says, okay, let's see what you get in. What plaintiff submitted eventually from Drs. Morton and Dr. Elliott as explained in the red brief, did not distinguish her condition of porphyria from MCS. So basically what we have is plaintiff is coming in and saying, my claim is different than MCS, but my evidence shows it's the same. So the magistrate is looking at that saying, well, I still have to get past, I can't get to the merits of plaintiff's summary judgment unless I get past the Daubert admissibility.
You've answered my
Thank
question.
Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity for a couple more minutes.
Yes, and this is really the heart of both cases. Why don't you take a couple minutes and rebuttal?
All right, I appreciate that. First, with regard to Goodwin's question, the plaintiff in this case was pro se until the appeal was filed. She did retain me to appear for her at that single argument, but she remained pro se, and she got notices as pro se, and she submitted the supplemental materials as pro se litigant. She wanted an opportunity to have her case argued in the court and hired me to do that. But ER 18, and it's set out again at page 6 of the blue brief, has the factual allegations of the motion for summary judgment that are relevant to this case. Number 8, the defendant asserts as a fact that multiple chemical sensitivities is not recognized as a diagnosis in the International Classification of Diseases, and Dr. Burton, defendant's expert, has had occasion to research multiple chemical sensitivities and does not believe it to be a valid diagnosis. Multiple chemical sensitivities is not a diagnosis recognized by the American Medical Association. Now, we know that Dr. Burton actually testified, their expert, that porphyria is such a recognized disease. Then number 9 of the factual allegations is, in Dr. Burton's opinion, herbicides sprayed by ODOT approximately 2 miles from Ronsey's home would have no impact on porphyria, even if Ronsey actually has porphyria. The appropriate use of pesticides is not linked to human illness. Now
that was the defense expert's opinion.
That is the statement of fact upon which the defendant based his motion for summary judgment in the concise statement of material fact.
Well, you still haven't pointed out what evidence you had that this spray caused her symptoms to flare up, other than her ipsy dixit, that she would have these symptoms when she went down this road.
And I agree with that, Your Honor, and I again contend that when the allegation of fact by the defendant was that the pesticides did not cause impacts on her porphyria when it was sprayed 2 miles from her home, did not raise a genuine issue of material fact as to what happened when she actually passed physically through the spray, which is what Dr. Engelking's declaration is about. Had they stated in their motion for summary judgment, there's a genuine issue, that there is no genuine issue of material fact, but that for an individual with porphyria to pass through these substances when they're aerosolized would not affect her, or they did not affect this plaintiff, we would have, I'm sure she would have responded, at least I would have advised her to, with her own declarations and declarations of her experts to the contrary. But that contention was not made. What was disputed was whether, if they're sprayed 2 miles from her home and she never leaves her home, whether they would affect her. And she doesn't dispute that she has no evidence that they would, although she may believe it. But what her contention was in the complaint was that she physically went through the pesticides and that caused her to have reactions.
What was her evidence of the nature and quality and volume of this aerosolization of this herbicide?
Well, that's Dr. Engelking's declaration, and it also was undisputed by the state that they had sprayed the specific chemicals she alleged at the specific times and places that she alleged. They didn't dispute that.
Well,
Dr. Engelking goes and describes how that material aerosolizes and how it stays in the air. And then Dr. Morton and Dr. Elliott say that she is sensitive to suffering potentially fatal reactions if she inhales this stuff when it's aerosolized.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case of Ronci versus the Oregon Department of Transportation is submitted. We'll now hear argument in a related case, Ronci versus Lane County. You can come back up here.